It's a trap!
Hello, and welcome to a very special episode of Radio TCX.
This is usually your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy.
But this week we've changed to a new structure where we're going to be discussing a very important piece of cinema from the 20th century.
We're taking you way, way back to before X-Wing was even released. In fact, we're going even farther back, before even Tim and I were born. We're going to the movie that started it all.
We take you back to the year 1978. Just 1 year prior, the fantastic, groundbreaking film Star Wars had been released, and building upon that hype was a sequel coming that would overwhelm anyone's expectations.
That's right, folks. We're taking you all the way back to the film that started it all, the Star Wars Holiday Special.
So today, guys, in lieu of our normal X-Wing content and in this holiday spirit mood that we're in right now, we're going to be discussing the Star Wars Holiday Special, which aired on CBS back in 1978.
Right, and we thought, what better way to, you know, celebrate a great year of X-Wing with you fine folks than to punish ourselves very badly by watching the Holiday Special for your entertainment.
So going into this, there's a couple things you want to know. We're discussing now before we watch it. We're going to watch it and then come back and share our thoughts on the production. I've actually seen this. It was a while ago. But Carson, you've never seen the Star Wars Holiday Special, right?
Right. So I'm going into a relatively fresh viewing experience. Obviously, I've heard about the special just by hanging out with lovely X-Wing folks. For some reason, they just love to talk about it.
And I know, as most of you listening to this podcast are in some capacity Star Wars fans, so I'm certain you've heard about the Holiday Special. I'm guessing, though, most of you probably haven't seen it in its entirety. Please let us know on social media. I would love to see which people have seen it, which people have not, and which people have avoided it altogether. This was basically a variety show put together in 1978, shortly after the release of Star Wars, to play off the hype there. And they got together most of the principal cast. So you've got Harrison Ford, Mark Hamill, Carrie Fisher, Anthony Daniels, Peter Mayhew. All your major cast members are on the show. They introduce a bunch of crazy new characters. You get to meet Chewbacca's family coming here. One thing I want to ask Carson before we watch this is, Carson, other than you mentioned Wookiees when we were talking about this before the show, what do you know about the Holiday Special? Like, just through hearing it through X-Wing fans.
Well, I mean, you just mentioned it there. Basically, I know that it kind of focuses on the Wookiees and that supposedly it's very, very bad. That's basically it. And then you answered a few more of the questions I have, which was, you know, how many of the main cast are in it? And I guess most of them. So that's exciting. Looking forward to seeing all my favorites back on the screen again. I feel like I might have seen a snippet of something that I did not quite recognize as, you know, the Holy Star Wars Trinity, some sort of cartoon thing with Boba Fett. So I'm not sure if that is part of the Holiday Special. So I guess I'll find that out. So, you know, listeners, if you've never seen the Holiday Special, you can join me in, you know, this first viewing of what I'm sure is just going to be a great reoccurring holiday treat for us every year.
Well, I'm very excited, Carson, to share this opportunity with you. We're all ready to go. I'm wearing my R2-D2 pajamas. I think Carson's wearing his Greedo pajamas. We've got our blue milk and Wookiee cookies, and we're ready to go.
Well, now, one thing you should know, you know, before you sign up for the Radio TTCX Holiday Special, you know, you might think, okay, what did these X-Wing podcasters know about, you know, the film industry? But I want to let you know that, you know, our expertise is not just limited to playing X-Wing, but we're also, you know, very skilled in the film review art. Yes, so Tim, why don't you let the listeners know just how qualified you are to review this excellent piece of cinema?
Well, I think as a strongly opinionated nerd, I think I'm qualified to critique any film on the highest level. But specifically why I'm good at critiquing films, I respect masterful pieces of film work like The Godfather or great pieces of cinema like Gremlins. I think both masterpieces in their own right. I actually also, prior to this podcast, this is totally true, I recorded another podcast where we talked about pop culture, and we also reviewed films. One of my favorite episodes of that being where we looked at the body of work of Tom Cruise, one of the greatest actors of all time. So I feel like I'm pretty well prepared to critique this. Now, Carson, what are your credentials for reviewing this masterwork?
Well, you know, I'm very well educated in the film review, critique, film studies field. I, you know, signed up for a film studies course my freshman year of college. And of course, on the first day, I got the movie list of all the movies we'd watch. Mm-hmm. And I noticed they were all black and white movies. And that the professor said that Avatar was a bad movie. So I decided I would not be taking that fine course. So that about sums up my film studies knowledge. So I think this will be a great journey. We have two experts to guide you on this journey through the holiday special.
Okay. Yeah, I think we're both.
And I'm excited, Tim.
We're overqualified, if anything. So there's going to be a little music here playing. And then the next time you hear our voices, we'll have just watched the holiday special and we'll share some of our thoughts.
Yes. Right now, morale is very high on the show. We'll see how we're doing in a few minutes. And there will be probably spoilers as we discuss the show. So if you really had your heart set on watching that without spoilers, be sure to do that right now.
All right. So the next time we talk to you guys, just a few moments here, you'll get to hear our review of the Star Wars Holiday Special.
Tim, are there Ewoks?
Couldn't we get him a comb? He gave him a comb last year.
What can you get a wooden for Christmas when he already owns a comb? What can you get in a hurry for a furry kind of friend like that? Take home. Oh, he doesn't need.
Okay, so we are back from our viewing of the Star Wars Holiday Special, and I'm feeling a lot of mixed emotions right now, I'd have to say. Mostly disappointment.
You know what, Tim? I'd have to say on my end, morale is still very high. I just spent an hour and a half watching a pleasant family film that I am just excited to unpack with you.
Now, when you say family film, you mean that it involves a family, not that it's necessarily appropriate for families, right?
You know, I would say that this film is still unrated, but perhaps we can come to an agreement on a rating by the end of it.
Yeah, I think if anything, it falls into that like Indiana Jones category where Raiders of the Lost Ark was PG back in the day, but they didn't have the PG-13 rating yet. So I think modern sensibilities might come into play. So if you haven't seen the holiday special, I can't necessarily even say right now that I'd recommend it. You're going to have to listen to this episode to really see our full thoughts on it. But we're going to kind of go through it here and share some notes point by point as we go through the holiday special. So even if you haven't seen it, hopefully you can kind of track what's going on. And maybe you don't even need to see it after you hear us talk about it. So
I think if you're, you know, in the mood for an emotional roller coaster, this is definitely the film for you. I think the part of the roller coaster that this film just really feels the most like is the part where you're waiting in line to get on the roller coaster.
Specifically waiting in line for a roller coaster that ends up being kind of disappointing and sad, right? It would be kind of like thinking you're waiting in line for a roller coaster and then, you know, ending at a carousel. And then you're like, well, as long as I'm here, I guess I'll just, you know, try to enjoy
this. You know, Tim, I think you're being a little mean. There was some action, some tragedy, a lot of joke attempts. And of course, like any great Star Wars film, a lot of product placement.
So what you're saying is it's a lot like recording a podcast with you. So we know this was a big deal back in the day because this holiday special preempted both the Wonder Woman TV show and the Incredible Hulk. So people were psyched for this. You know, we're talking knocking down two big TV shows for a week so we can all view this holiday special. And it starts off pretty strong. You get a nice shot of Han and Chewie in the Falcon running away from a couple Star Destroyers in some footage that's definitely not just reused from A New Hope.
Yeah, so I think the best way for us to talk about this and unpack the everything that is the holiday special would be to go through it chronologically and kind of unpack the scenes that we think need to be discussed and then kind of go through at the end and talk about the overall opinions and the overarching themes of the show. So I think, yeah, let's definitely start with that cold open, Han and Chewie in the spaceship, running away from some Star Destroyers. And the thing I want to talk about is, were you a little disappointed when the jump to hyperspace actually worked?
I mean, you know, we hadn't seen Empire Strikes Back wasn't going to appear for a couple more years after this holiday special debuted. So, you know, we weren't used to the idea of the Falcon having a little bit of a struggle in that regard. I like that it worked because it just got the thing going. And, you know, this thing is only an hour and 40 minutes long, but it feels substantially longer than that, especially when you get into the music. So I was happy that we could just get it started. Now, the main problem I have was that we moved from a nice little action sequence right at the start of Han trying to get Chewie back home to his family in time for Life Day into what can only be described as a tedious 13 minutes that would follow.
Right, and I think the cold open really sets you up to be disappointed there because it is fast. Okay, Han and Chewie are in trouble, but boom, they jump to hyperspace and they get out of the trouble. End scene, move on. Which, of course, we know from Empire, if the hyperspace doesn't work, then that becomes the plot of a whole movie in itself. So why waste that plot point on the holiday open? Save that for another film. But yeah, the quick pace of the cold open juxtaposed to the following scene is a little disorientating. Probably how I imagine coming out of hyperspace feels.
Well, we cut over to Chewbacca's family, which if you don't know, Chewie does have a family. He's got his wife, Mala, his son, Lumpy, which is an adorable little, you know, 4-foot Wookiee, and then his rather creepy and unsettling father, Itchy.
Yes, and of course, Mala, Chewie's wife, is really the pillar of the family. She's doing all of the family work while Itchy sits on his lazy boy and paints some X-Wing miniatures. And what I love about this scene, though, is just how many X-Wings are in it. You know, Fantasy Flight really did a good job with making sure that there was X-Wing product placement all throughout the holiday special. And this scene, it really stuck out.
Which is especially, you know, surprising and significant given that their company didn't form until a good, I think, 15 to 20 years later.
Well, foresight is really important in the business industry, Tim.
Yeah, you got to be ready. And I think it really paid off because we all, as soon as I saw those, I wanted to just play some X-Wing.
Right. I was like, why am I watching this when I could be playing X-Wing? Was definitely crossed my mind.
I do want to say, I think it's a really bold, creative choice to start anything, any kind of Star Wars film with 15 minutes of nonverbal Wookiee family life. Just kind of little Lumpy's running around, playing with his toys. Itchy's just sitting on his lazy boy, hanging out. There's really nothing that happens for the first, I don't know, 12 minutes of this special after we see that jump to hyperspace.
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely an endearing family scene in an age before subtitles. yeah, definitely an interesting creative choice, to say the least.
Well, this happened a long, long time ago, so they hadn't invented subtitles yet. That was a ways away. And we're not kidding about this. If you haven't seen the special, Chewie does have a family. He has a wife and a father and a child. Well, presumably he had a father, but he has a wife and a child. And it really raises some significant questions about the context of A New Hope, where you see Chewie hanging out with this loner in a dirty bar on Tatooine. What is Chewie's story here? Like, is this his job? He just goes home at the end of the day to his wife and kids after weeks of smuggling and doing all kinds of things below the law.
Okay, so this was one of the big questions I wanted to ask at the end, but perhaps this is the most appropriate time for it. You know, here we see Chewie's family getting on without him. It seems like it's a common theme that he's away from home. And of course, we know from all the other films, he's off on quite a few adventures. We never even hear him talk about his family.
But it seems like his family thinks about him quite a bit.
Well, and to me, this really actually, this film reminds me of a classic piece of cinema, Lethal Weapon. I'm sure, hopefully a lot of you have seen this movie. Classic buddy cop film. And I think the dynamic, this adds to the Star Wars universe, a dynamic that's kind of a buddy cop dynamic between Han and Chewie. Before, you thought they were just both kind of smugglers out there just trying to get by, and they get thrown into this rebellion. But I like the idea that Chewie's more of like the straight edge cop, like the good cop with the nice family life. And Han Solo's kind of more the cop on the edge, your Riggs to Murtaugh kind of dynamic that you see here. And that it adds a little bit of kind of a background story to, you know, Han's development over the original trilogy. He becomes, you know, a little bit softer. He's not just murdering people and shooting them first in bars. He becomes a little bit softer. You think a lot of that has to be his friendship with Luke and Leia. I think it's probably, he's probably spending a lot of time with the Chewbacca family, you know, getting to see what it's like to have a nice, wholesome family life.
Right. And I think, you know, you can definitely take that approach and analyzing that dynamic when you look at the original trilogy. I think that gets a little bit more complicated when we look now at episodes 7 and 8. We understand a little bit more about Han raising his family. And, you know, it seems like perhaps he took Chewie's example and, you know, was never home.
Oh, so you're saying this has application even looking forward to the portrayals we see in The Last Jedi. That's a very
absolutely
good insight, I think.
And, you know, I think now those movies make so much more sense. I don't know how I missed this in my, you know, original Star Wars canon viewing. You know, from that perspective alone, I think that makes this a must watch.
Now, how does this all tie in at the end of this Wookiee home life sequence where Lumpy pulls up the holochess board and then just watches a 2-minute really bizarre holographic circus? Does that connect at all to the new?
Well, let's back up before we get to the circus. Because I want to talk about the pristine paradise that Kashyyyk is presented as. This looks like one of those Instagram vacation homes where you can go, you know, stay at a treehouse, have a novel trip. And Chewie lives in this paradise. Yet, he chooses to hang out basically in an RV with his buddy Han.
Well, you have to think that it's probably, you know, a house that nice is probably pretty expensive, and he needs to find some illegitimate businesses in order to make that kind of capital to keep that family afloat. You know, that's why he spends so much time away from home. I do love that they used just one Ralph McQuarrie illustration. Like, I think it was just concept art for what the Wookiee planet would be, and they just keep cutting back to it. And then they superimpose Lumpy walking on the railing. Oh, some great special effects.
Absolutely.
I'm surprised it wasn't ILM, you know,
with the amazing scenery and then the technology in this, it's unparalleled, really. I think this was really the cutting edge Star Wars film.
All right, but can we get back to the bad circus? All right, so there's
okay,
the
let's get back to the
circus.
Bad circus. It's a very bad circus.
It is terrible, but Lumpy's really into it, which makes you wonder, like, what are the levels of entertainment here? Or, you know, my other theory, actually, honestly, so we have this terrible circus of people in all these brightly colored costumes doing mild acrobatics. I'm wondering if, like, maybe they can't afford better programming. So this is just like the demo that comes with the holochess table. Like, and then you have to, like, do in-app purchases to get the other content.
I mean, that's definitely possible. But Lumpy is just so into it that I feel like if he knew there was better things out there, he wouldn't be as into his subpar programming.
So it's probably a deal. He's probably an aspiring acrobat, really. Like, he wants to be the first Wookiee acrobat.
I mean, we do see him do the tightroping up on the treehouse balcony. And, you know, maybe Lumpy is just a big disappointment to Chewie, and that's why he's not home. Because he couldn't handle his son going off to join the circus.
He wants his kid to be a smuggler like him, not some sort of circus acrobat.
Got him going to the family business.
Wow, there's a lot of subtext to this that I was not parlayed to. Okay, but after about 13 minutes, we finally get the introduction of some of the principal cast members from the original trilogy.
Wow, and what great introductions. Oh, we see in a video broadcast to Luke Skywalker and R2-D2. Where Luke delivers possibly one of the best lines of the whole holiday special, and perhaps
the Star Wars franchise, where he just turns to the camera and says, "What's up?"
You know how Luke is, too. He's got that dead-eye glare and kind of the joyless interaction he has with the Wookiee family.
You know, Mark Hamill gives a stellar performance in every Star Wars film he is. Really steals the show. And I think the Holly special is no different here. Definitely stole this whole scene. And a little bit of my heart when he delivered it as well.
I also did appreciate the casual misogyny of him trying to make Mala smile. I thought that was a nice touch.
Yeah, classic Luke Skywalker there.
Thankfully, this Luke sequence doesn't last too long, though, because really the focus, what everyone wants to see in this special, is more of the Chewbacca family, sans Chewbacca. So thankfully, the Luke sequence, only about a minute and a half, 2 minutes long, and then you're back to the family drama.
Right, and so now we have the kind of Han's foil character, the smuggler who turns out to be a racist Santa type character for the Wookiees.
Whose name I cannot remember, and I just watched the special, but he's played by Art Carney, and he runs a little shop.
It's a completely forgettable character that keeps showing up.
He keeps showing up. Completely forgettable. We should call him Dave.
I think racist Santa.
Racist Santa?
Makes the Dave, most sense.
Dave the racist Santa. We see him in his shop for a little bit, and he has a weird exchange with an Imperial officer. Then he comes over to the Wookiee family, Chewbacca's family, because apparently they're really good friends, and he's assuring them that Chewbacca's going to make it home in time. He's not going to be stopped by the Imperials. And he comes bearing
by gifts. Calling their dad a shaggy carpet.
Oh, he does do that, too. He calls Chewbacca a shaggy carpet. Put some nice coding into his video message. But he comes over and he comes bearing gifts.
Yeah, after selling an Imperial officer the Swiss Army knife of toothbrushes, he brings a gift for each of the Wookiee relatives. Mala and Lumpy both get, you know, boxes of some sort of techno gizmo. And then Itchy gets a very questionable Christmas gift. Seems to be some sort of adult video. And this is where we kind of start to question, who is this special for? What is their target viewing audience of the Star Wars holiday special?
Yeah, I don't want to get too into the details of Itchy's weird musical pseudo-adult video, but I think we can just say safely that we would definitely not recommend watching this family holiday special with your family. That's probably not a good idea.
Yeah, you would think with all the X-Wing product placement that this would be a show for kids, but the subtext, I think, says otherwise. And the text on screen, I think, also just says otherwise.
It's in this video, though, that we get our first real musical number. And it kind of sets the tone for the rest of the special, where there's going to be multiple musical numbers. And they're all going to be really, really long. They kind of don't end.
Right. You get the gist within, I think, the first 5 to 10 seconds. And then they go on for a few more minutes. But, you know, why should the musical numbers be any different from any of the other scenes? You know, the holiday special cuts to a new scene, gets to the point, delivers the message, and then sits there for about 10 more minutes, just letting that seep in. In case you fell asleep, you still have a time for a 10-minute nap, and you can still get the point of each scene. But listeners, I want you to know I did not fall asleep. I stayed eyes glued to the screen, not wanting to miss any content to discuss with you.
And I think we're all thankful for that, because I think you and I are really doing some important work here for people who just don't have the wherewithal to watch this special. I think it's important that they have it summarized to them in a way that I guess a Wikipedia page could do just as effectively.
This
but
is an
moving
important
along,
film for the Star Wars canon, Tim. Someone needs to unpack it.
So let's move on with the story, though. So we get to the point where the Wookiee family is kind of invaded by some Imperial officers. They're looking for rebels, also known as Han and Chewie. So they send a couple stormtroopers and a couple Imperial officers to the Wookiee home here, and they just start tearing up the place.
Right. And, you know, as the stormtroopers are searching the home, I think we get perhaps the biggest character development we've ever seen for a stormtrooper. There's a whole scene where a stormtrooper learns how a cabinet works.
That so that is like one of my favorite moments because like I didn't remember this one the last time I saw it, but they one of the officers tells all the stormtroopers to search the house, and there's this big dramatic like stormtrooper walks up to this shelf and then slides a cabinet door open, and like there's a pause like he's gonna find something.
Oh, there's so much dramatic suspense with this cabinet door.
And then he opens and then it, nothing. He looks at it, and there's nothing there.
And he just slides the door back and then pauses and contemplates. Oh, that was neat. It was a stellar performance by the stormtrooper.
Certainly
really
a standout moment.
All of the dramatic depth that that scene deserved. And I thought that scene really worked for me.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely a highlight. I'm glad they included it early on. The rest, it kind of goes downhill from here, folks. Like, from this point on.
I mean, I just thought this scene did so much world building for me. I think it really brought to light the education that the Imperial troopers have been provided. You know, they're just really rushed through blaster training, and they don't have time to learn, you know, the basics of how carpentry works. These are specialized Imperial officers. You know, they don't have time to learn these interesting civilian life tidbits. And I think, you know, that's what this holiday special did the most for me was, you know, those world building elements where we get to see life outside of all the combat action that happens in all the other films.
Yeah, and that's important. I think people are a little tired. They don't go to Star Wars movies to see a lot of action and special effects and character development. What they really want to see is a lot of little nuanced details about how does the Star Wars world work on the day-to-day basis, you know? And it's good to see that.
What's life like in Kashyyyk?
Yeah, which they didn't even know it was called Kashyyyk at this point, you know? Apparently that name got applied later.
How racist is their Santa on Kashyyyk?
Yeah, and we get back. Oh, though, we get to the maybe the best part. I the cabinet opening is pretty great, but we get honestly to what I think is the best part of the special. Lumpy gets to watch a special program featuring none other than one of the most iconic Star Wars characters of all time. A dinosaur.
Right. In the midst of Imperial officers ransacking their house, Chewie's kid Lumpy sits down and watches a cartoon of his dad and his dad's friends.
Yeah, and this before we dive into what the cartoon is, I think this raises some important questions. Like, are there people out there making cartoons in the Star Wars universe about things that had just happened? Like, and then sending them out? Is that part of the rebellion? Like, they have an animation division who's sending out subversive cartoons?
Well, if so, it's still not great because they're saying, hey, Empire, here are the names of all of our heroes. Don't bother looking them up in the yellow pages. And, you know, the cartoon is star-studded. This is where we get most of the appearances of Leia Organa, Luke Skywalker, Han Solo.
Really tired
this
Han
is where
Solo.
Most of their screen time comes in.
Yeah, and we get so it's a pretty great cartoon actually. So I think it's the same animation studio that did the mid 80s droids cartoon. So it's a very fluid animation, very energetic. And we get to see a little adventure where there's something wrong with Chewie and Han. And actually I kind of don't want to spoil it because I feel like if you're going to watch any one part of the holiday special, first you're going to watch the cabinet door opening, then you're going to watch this cartoon. Like, I think that's how good it is. We get to see Luke Skywalker in a Y-Wing, which has some application, I think, for the X-Wing miniatures game. Because we can finally get that Luke Skywalker Y-Wing pilot we've all been waiting for.
Yeah, okay, so we won't talk too much about the cartoon plot point-wise. But I definitely want to say that the cartoon was definitely the most hype-paced and action-packed of all of the special.
Barring the cabinet door.
Yes. Well, that was more of a dramatic suspense. Here we get the action. We get crashed spaceships, some laser battles.
Dinosaurs.
Some interesting levels of animal cruelty. But let's talk about Luke and that Y-Wing. My first thought was, oh, cool. When are we going to see that Luke Skywalker Y-Wing pilot card hit X-Wing? That would be exciting. And then I very quickly transitioned to, how is Luke an I-5 pilot? How many times, I think the times we see this guy get into a spaceship and the times we see him then proceed to crash that spaceship are basically one and one. Like, it's a pretty even ratio there.
Yeah, now that you're taking the holiday special into account, yeah, he flies the Y-Wing for all of 14 seconds and then immediately crashes it into a gooey dinosaur planet.
Okay, so but what is his crashed ship count here? Because we have that Y-Wing, the Snowspeeder crashes, he crashes into Dagobah. Will we see the crashed ship in episode 8? Or he just parked it and forgot that there was an ocean there, not sure. But isn't he supposed to be one of the better pilots? I think his track record says otherwise here.
Well, I want to say that he lands... So now I'm thinking about it. I want to say he lands the X-Wing in Last Jedi, because we see in this cartoon when the Y-Wing crashes into the, like, what is it, a pudding planet? It's kind of liquidy, but kind of dense. Some balloons deploy. Yeah, the balloons deploy off the Y-Wing, and we also see some on the Falcon that's also crash-landed. And I'm wondering, did this technology, like, get removed as the Star Wars universe progressed? Why would that X-Wing be underwater in The Last Jedi?
Yeah, and it definitely would have helped Yoda pull his sunken X-Wing out of Dagobah Swamp if it had some floaty balloons on it as well.
Maybe it's just a Y-Wing thing. And why?
Maybe it's just a Y-Wing thing. I don't know. Definitely need to make sure you put that on your X-Wing, Luke. Future Luke, you're going to need that a few more times.
Ooh, we do get the first introduction, though, of Boba Fett in this cartoon. That's a little-known fact here. Like, in Star Wars media, the first time anyone saw Boba Fett was in this cartoon. And I think the cartoon really highlights the main characteristics that we associate with Boba Fett, specifically the animal brutality.
Yeah, what an interesting choice here to introduce the character that we all know and love now, Boba Fett, but just as a cartoon character. And then I guess the choice was to take that cartoon character and put him into the next film. Clearly, this was a big success.
Speaks probably to the popularity of the whole holiday special. We do see Boba Fett, I think, hit his dinosaur mount. You heard that correctly. Probably 3 or 4 times at least in the short cartoon animated special. It's also interesting that Boba Fett, as the universe's greatest bounty hunter, decides to play a very subtle long con and befriend Luke and Han and the droids in order to eventually capture them.
Well, no, he's trying to, you know, uncover the location of the rebel base. Why get the leaders when you could get all of them?
Right, and also something to do with the talisman.
Well, yeah, don't forget about the talisman that makes things invisible, Tim. yeah, I'm just waiting for when that talisman is going to come back in episode 9.
Ooh, maybe that's it.
That's why Luke really went into hiding, was to find that talisman again.
And I think the talisman, you said the best line was Luke saying "was up" earlier in the special. I honestly think the best line in the whole holiday special is when a very dejected and sad sounding Harrison Ford has to say, and I quote, "He says our friend Boba found serum for the talisman virus."
I think, you know, they just love giving Harrison Ford the sci-fi tech lines. Because he seems to get all of them.
So we've talked about the dramatic high point, obviously the cabinet opening. We've talked about the action high point, obviously being the cartoon. Now I think we get into the emotional high point of the whole holiday special. We leave the cartoon, we go back to the Wookiee household, and we have a very...
Right, we transition from a fun, action-packed cartoon to the devastation that the stormtroopers are, you know, just laying on this Wookiee household. They're just ransacking it, and they go up to poor Lumpy's bedroom and just destroy all of his toys. And then he's got a stuffed Bantha that the stormtrooper decides to remove the head of very violently.
And I think even you look at the shot and artistically, you can definitely see where George was pulling from back in Revenge of the Sith, you know, that scene where Anakin pulls his lightsaber out and the younglings are all there and you just know what's going to happen next. This scene's a little bit more brutal because you actually see the payoff. You get a nice low shot behind the stormtrooper there, him holding his blaster, and you just know he's going to destroy that stuffed Bantha.
Right. I mean, you know, going to episode 3, I think Lucas learned his lesson. This was too graphic. You know, you see there's a scene with the younglings, the scene with the sand people in episode 2 where... You cut away. You don't show that violence on TV. But in the holiday special, they show all of the violence.
And I will have to say, the stormtrooper destroying that stuffed Bantha is definitely the evilest thing that has ever happened in the Star Wars universe. And
well, of course, he walks up to the Avantha, picks it up, contemplates his actions. He definitely is deliberate about this, and then very savagely and viciously removes that stuffed Avantha's head.
It's a Truman Capote in Cold Blood level of evil. Completely banal and without purpose.
And then we move on to the second part of the scene where Lumpy comes up and sees the devastation in his bedroom. And I think the emotional performance here from Lumpy really worked for me, where we get a Bantha burial scene. He lays the creature on his bed and covers it with a blanket. And I thought it was a really touching scene. And I thought the character portrayed a lot of emotional weight there.
This is definitely where I emotionally connected with the holiday special more than any other part of it. I really, you know, in that moment, I was Lumpy, standing there looking at my destroyed Bantha, wondering where my dad was. I think this really ties there's some goofy stuff that happens in the holiday special, but this really ties the whole thing together and makes you go, you know what? This is Star Wars.
Right. You know, you go from that earlier scene where Mala is cooking Bantha meat and just hacking up a big, nice loin of it.
Oh, yeah.
To now Lumpy burying his childhood friend, Bantha. I thought it just really connected a lot of the scenes. And I thought the payoff really worked.
And this leads us right into the final act where we see the story culminate and we get that payoff. We cut to Lumpy. He's frustrated. He's angry at these Imperial officers and these stormtroopers. They come into their home. They're ransacking the place. We don't know what's going to happen. But thankfully, racist Santa Claus Dave came and gave him a gift. It was a little transmitter he has to assemble. And Lumpy wants to use that in order to get rid of these stormtroopers. But first, he has to build it. So obviously, he puts in the instructional video.
Right. I mean, so this is quite the emotional transition here from, you know, such a tragic scene that really hit all of our heartstrings to transitioning to basically opening up a Lego instruction booklet and getting to work. But with a nice dying robot man to read those instructions out loud to you.
And it's true. He's a dying robot, man. He slowly and meticulously starts to fall apart as he's telling Lumpy how to assemble the transmitter. It's a surprise that Lumpy at all can assemble the transmitter, but, you know, he's a sharp kid. I will say, even with a dying robot man giving instructions for the transmitter, I think it was still more useful than the official X-Wing squad building app.
Oh, well, without a doubt. And I really like the timing and placement here of the dying robot man because, you know, at this point, you're well over an hour into the holiday special, and, you know, this stellar performance by Dying Robot Man, I really connected with me because at that point, I felt like Dying Robot Man, and his pain and how long this was taking was my pain as well.
And I think it runs deeper than that. I really feel like Dying Robot Man was an analogy for consumerism in 20th century society. I'm not going to explain how it would take far too long, and I don't think you people would understand. But I think it was really that, the thing I just said. Oh, yeah, we're running out of time here. Let's get through this. We got B. Arthur in the cantina with Volcano Head Man. He's trying to hit on her. She's
Volcano Head Man gets a very savage burn.
He does. He does.
But then, and then we get another long musical number in the cantina. This is, of course, because the Wookiees are watching a reality TV show about Tatooine. But then, yeah, that very last second there, we get a very horrifying ending to Volcano Head Returns in a very unsettling transition away. I think, in my opinion, Volcano Head is Star Wars' greatest villain. This is another part where I would definitely say, not a show for children.
Yeah, not a family special for families. Don't bring your family into this at all. All right, and then we get to the last...
Yeah, after that horrifying ending to the Tatooine scene, we transition to our uplifting closing scene.
Yeah, we see that Lumpy successfully uses his transmitter to trick all the Imperial officers into leaving. They leave one stormtrooper behind to watch the family, and then that stormtrooper goes on a mad dash. Also, I think the stormtrooper has some sort of crippling, you know, arthritis or something in his legs, given at the rate he chases Lumpy around the house. Seems like he's struggling with some sort of condition. But right when he's about to, you know, kill Lumpy or do something terrible. We're not exactly sure what the Stormtrooper's planning with through that, you know, lifeless, faceless mask. Han and Chewie show up to save the day. They basically push a Stormtrooper off a balcony, and Chewie's home in time for life day.
Right. And well, and definitely at the beginning of the Stormtrooper Lumpy chasing, we get quite a few, I would say, kind of like Tarantino-esque camera style shots that really, I think, imply the Stormtrooper's intentions here. And so it's great that Chewie and Han show up in time to save the day, because I was very much worried for Lumpy at that point. But, you know, after Han and Chewie save the day here, show up just in time, we then transition into what the actual Life Day celebration is.
Which Life Day apparently is about Wookiees putting on red velvet robes and holding snow globes.
Yeah, so the Life Day ritual, you pick up your light up snow globe and then
head down to the Tree of Life.
Did they float to the Tree of Life? It kind of felt like that scene in Coco where they go to the land of the dead walking across the bridge. I thought it was a very transcendent experience.
Well, I think actually the director of the Pixar animated, now modern classic, Coco, did say that the Star Wars holiday, the Star Wars holiday special, I think, was the main source of inspiration for that story. But either way, they float down. All your friends are there. Luke's there. Han's there. Leia's there. Leia sings a beautiful, well, she sings a song. She does sing a song about Life Day.
I wouldn't
have
said it was beautiful, but
it's definitely a song, though. And like every other song, too, it's just long enough, and then it keeps going.
It is definitely a song. And at that point, I was just ready to record the podcast. You know, as much as it was great to see another performance of Carrie Fisher, I wish that one went a little shorter. But my favorite part about the closing here is we get some really, you know, I thought this was, okay, we're done thinking, but we're at the end, but 3PO and R2-D2 really deliver quite a thinker, you know, to end on and, you know, stew about till you get to the next film, at least, where, you know, everyone's celebrating Life Day and R2-D2 and 3PO say, you know, at times like these, I really wish we were more alive. Which, you know, of course, at that time, you know, having these really in-depth, what does it mean to be alive? What are, you know, the robots? Are they alive? What is the definition of being alive, really? And I thought it was just really bold of Star Wars to really, you know, tackle these questions so early on.
And then our special ends. We move on to a one last shot of Chewbacca and his family sitting around the dinner table, and then I guess they bow their heads to pray. Beautiful.
Well, and they've got their, you know, Life Day snow globes.
So, Carson, now that you've seen the Star Wars Holiday Special, could you just give me your standout thoughts there? Was it everything you expected and less?
Well, Tim, I will say it was disappointing in ways I didn't expect, but also, you know,
disappointing in ways you did expect.
Yeah. I think, you know, when you hear about something you haven't built up for so long, nothing can ever really deliver on your expectations. And I guess it wasn't as bad as I thought it would be, but it was very different than I thought it would be. But I thought there was, you know, some really standout performances. Obviously, the emotional range of Lumpy, I thought, was stellar. And of course, Mark Hamill, you know, he delivered some great one-liners, but he also had some real thinkers, you know, when he gives some great advice, talking about how not everyone's perfect. So we really get to see the early depth of that Luke Skywalker character. And so I thought that was great. And I thought that really enriched my overall Star Wars series appreciation. Tim, who was the standout performer for you?
I'm really gonna have to go with Boba Fett. Actually, Boba Fett in that cartoon, it brings so much symmetry to his storyline. I feel like this cartoon is very an essential part of the Boba Fett story because you get to see that payoff. You know, it's kind of an old fashioned moralistic fairy tale where we see Boba being really brutal to these animals for no reason. They're just being animals. And then we see that payoff come Return of the Jedi when he gets eaten by the Sarlacc. Like, I really think that this adds emotional weight to that, where you're seeing that real payoff of, like, you know what? It wasn't that he was fighting against the heroes in our story. It was really showing you that you shouldn't be cruel to animals for any reason, or they will consume you in the desert. And honestly, I think that's what Life Day is all about.
Absolutely. I mean, I thought the scenes were long, but I thought, you know, the messages within those scenes I thought were important. Ones you want to tell your children about. Definitely not have them learn it from the show because it's not for children. But, you know, you watch the holiday special
and kind of relay it back to them.
In your own way, relay those messages to your children.
Well, I think we should leave our audience with one of the great lines delivered by our dear friend Art Carney's racist Santa Claus. And I think it really sums up the whole story. He said, "Try to enjoy your life, Dave."
Oh, my stars. I've never been so busy before. It seems Christmas arrives sooner each year. Christmas in the stars. Christmas in the stars. What a merry Christmas this will be. Christmas in the stars, out among the stars, lighting up a Christmas tree. Come on, everyone, and sing.
Our hearts are full of joy.